Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. We continue our special on U.S. jobs, how U.S. workers have been marginalized, their jobs outsourced in many cases to workers who are now brought to America to work under visas held by their bosses, under H-1B status.
These corporate visa programs hurt both the American workforce and the Indian workforce, or I should say the citizens from abroad who come here.
We hear more from Donna Conroy, Executive Director of Bright Future Jobs, brightfuturejobs.com, and she's working to advance legislation introduced by Democrat Dick Durbin of Illinois that would give U.S. workers a fair shot at a job in their own country. Corporations are hiring foreign workers to save on benefits, pensions, wages. And here, the current headlines about Greece are illustrative. Mismanagement by corporations and government offices has led to high inflation and a collapsing economy. And so the Greek government has announced a plan to cut both social programs and pensions. As in America, aging Greek workers may now have to tack on years of work despite any plans they may have had to retire. As news has spread of this plan internationally, gold and metal futures have rallied. The Greek and U.S. stock index futures rose, and the international financial press is lauding a major financial bailout plan for Greece. International markets love this idea of a Greek government breaking its social contract with citizens. U.S. firms have been doing this for years, and Donna Conroy explained why the promises made by some CEOs that they will keep at least some U.S. jobs at home are deceptive.
The outsourcing of American jobs, in effect, it doesn't create permanent jobs in the Indian economy, unlike the outsourcing of factories. So when a company outsources to China or Mexico, those jobs stay in Mexico. They don't just jump back. What happens is, because these jobs actually stay in the American economy, they're just located in a different geography. If that outsourcer fails to deliver, which many of them do, those job openings return instantaneously to our shores. These jobs actually stay in the U.S. economy, but they're located abroad for a short period of time, and, you know, the rubber band is really these corporate visa programs, these domestic laws that allow this process. So if these corporate visa programs are changed, which we've got momentum in Congress to do, we're going to see job openings return very quickly to our shores. Listeners might be fascinated to know that many Indians find the outsourcing of American jobs extremely controversial. They don't think it's a good way to build the Indian economy, again, because these jobs are transient. The Indian government has gone back and forth about how much support they'll provide to these Indian outsourcing companies, because it is an extremely risky proposition to invest in jobs that could leave the next day.
Well, for years, we've heard that American students, American workers are not competitive with foreign workers in either their work practices or math skills, you know, science, high tech. And then on the other hand, what winds up happening is very often the very people that are criticized as, you know, not competent wind up training their replacements, don't they?
This is the power of the lie that gets repeated over and over again. Americans believe the mythology that Americans can't cut it in science and technology. They also believe that our American children can't cut it in science and technology. What's fascinating is the last International science testing actually showed that children from Massachusetts and Minnesota, the data was pulled out separately. This is how we know that fourth and eighth graders in Massachusetts and Minnesota actually are on par or outperform their counterparts in Singapore, Hong Kong, and Japan. However, technology companies are extremely fond of blaming American fourth and eighth graders for their performance in science and technology as a cover or as a reason that Americans need to support these corporate visa programs.
Right now, your goal is passage of legislation to level the playing field for American workers. Just go over the provisions in this legislation and talk about who wrote them, who put this together.
This was written by Senator Durbin's staff, a former Indian H-1B, Rajiv Dabhadkar, and I lobbied Durbin's staff. We explained how these corporate visa programs hurt both the American workforce and the Indian workforce, or I should say the citizens from abroad who come here. I showed them H-1B only want ads, and I talked about the segregation and the hyper competition that was happening in the IT workforce. So the bill reflects some of our requirements. Number one, the bill is going to force American companies to recruit locally to consider U.S. talent before they recruit abroad. The second thing is the way that the Department of Labor and the U.S. government will be able to monitor this is every company who wants to recruit abroad must post their job opening on the Department of Labor website. This really addresses the culture of bypass. Every single company that posts a job opening there, it will be a red light that they want to recruit abroad. And corporations recruit abroad under cover of darkness. So this is forcing these companies to be public will probably cut this use by at least 40 or 50% right off the bat. Another provision actually looks at the composition of the company's staff. So if more than half of their employees are on visas, the company will not be able to use these programs, period, whether they seek abroad, local, you know, in other words, they are absolutely 100% cut off. And this addresses the segregation that we're finding in the IT industry. A third thing is, again, we have want ads all over the internet that call for H-1B only, or they're targeted for citizens from abroad. When Senator Durbin saw these ads, he immediately directed his staff to write a bill to reform these programs. If these want ads appear on the internet, that company will not be able to use the program. In addition, it ends the displacement of American workers. Corporations will have to certify that they haven't laid off workers 6 months before, and they won't be laying off workers 6 months after. And then the last one, it will prevent corporations, third-party labor contractors, essentially staffing companies, from being able to farm out their visa staff. This is a huge blow to the labor contracting, which is rife in the U.S. technology industry. We think there will be a festival of American hiring once these provisions are passed.
These workers can be fired. I mean, they don't have the kind of long-term job security that some American workers had let's say during the 50s.
However, no IT worker, whether they're American green card holders or on corporate visas, have permanent jobs the way we did in the 50s. That disappeared, I would say, in the late 1980s from the IT industry. It certainly completely disappeared by the turn of the century. So what happens is these citizens from abroad many times are exploited. They face long periods of unemployment. Their pay is shorted. They're forced, actually, many times to sign a bond contract. Most Americans don't know what this is because it's actually illegal in the United States, but it's legal in India. A bond contract is a contract between the employer and the employee, where the employee gives up their right to quit the job, to quit the organization. If they do quit the organization before the fulfillment of the contract, then they have to pay thousands of dollars back to the corporation. So many Americans focus on the U.S. law that defines an H-1B, but they miss how the culture in India and the labor culture in India actually comes crashing on our shores via these, what they call Indian body shops. These individuals are actually indentured via Indian labor law, which is, again, culturally shifted here. So both workforces actually face high levels of unemployment. The American workforce actually faces hyper competition because there are only so many job openings and, of course, you know, so many people who are qualified for. And that has caused some rancor among American IT professionals, amongst ourselves, because we're starting to organize politically. What we're seeing is a shift among American IT professionals to start to work together more. So I think we see a bright light at the end of the tunnel.
What do you see as the perfect setting for, let's say, corporate success that also amounts to worker success?
We need to restore the right to compete for job openings in our own country. Without having that legal and social right, we've essentially created barriers to even entering the U.S. workforce. So that's central to my vision of a good job, is the ability for corporations to actually see the talent that you have within and not looking at anything outside that. But of course, once you land the job, it would be, again, permanency and, of course, benefits. But again, the other thing is career mobility. When a worker is with a company, the longer the individual is with the company, the more valuable and talented they become. So I think having corporations value longevity and really see the talent that they have within, you know, I think that's probably the number one. We need an attitude adjustment. These corporations need to realize that they have the talent right in their own backyard. And then in addition to that, something that we've forgotten about, which is in-house training and paying for, you know, further training through the universities or specialized certifications, that's the social contract. That's good for the economy, good for the workers, and, hey, it's producing profits in Europe. I don't see why they can't produce profits here.
You're listening to Talk Nation Radio, and we're speaking with Donna Conroy of Bright Future Jobs. U.S. corporations, UTC in Connecticut, but countless others all over the country, are setting their sights on foreign addresses for cheaper manufacturing. They'll build weapons, aircraft, cities in China, India, and other countries, not America. And many people are wondering just how far this can all go and the international economy, you know, stay stable, because what dollars Americans are earning are also being spent on Chinese goods, you know, in places like Walmart. So it's a real self-defeating cycle, right?
It is, right. And that's the goal of globalization, is to pull the entire globe into a downward force, right, to make us dependent on cheap goods from China, because they have the ability to keep Chinese at very, very low wages. And the polar opposite is the movement for localism. And I think that we see that, for instance, in the European Union, they trade amongst each other. They support the local economy. They value the local economy. They have a completely different orientation. Let's put it this way. I think that Europeans, both working class and middle class, have been shaping their societies and transforming their daily lives for many years. And I hope that Americans will see that it's actually the political process, essentially writing the rules, that will create a strong local economy.
We hear what amounts to begging at times, you know, as politicians and others fall over themselves to try to convince U.S. corporations to stay in the U.S. And here and there now, we're seeing think tanks, experts calling on U.S. workers to accept much lower pay as a solution to this problem.
These are sycophants, plain and simple. We must stop begging. We must understand the crucial role that we play. It is our sweat, it's our ingenuity, it's our talent that has built the economy and the nation. However, we haven't taken all that ingenuity and talent and directed it into the political arena. That's our next step. That is where we can meet this new breed of CEO and be equals and start writing the rules under which we interact with each other. It is about us writing the contract for America. And I'm confident that despite these sycophants, at least the American IT workforce is starting to realize that their participation in the political arena will guarantee that Americans can participate in the digital age.
What happens if we're all left behind, as it were? I mean, can't we rebuild new companies? Can't we rebuild our economy? There's plenty of talent in America, right?
Exactly. That's my point, is that we have the talent here. Every single economy has talent. And you either respect that and pay that talent, or you use federal, state, and local laws to destroy that talent. And these, again, this new breed is manipulating American laws to destroy us. But we can stand up for ourselves. We're adults. That's what big boys do, is they get in the game, they represent themselves, and they say, we are part of this nation, and we are going to define the rules and what fair play really means.
The whole goal during the 1700s, you know, the time of formation of the U.S. government system, I thought, was to not only avoid having to have tea parties to change the culture of, you know, becoming an indentured servant to anyone, a king or anyone else, but also to, if you could, avoid simply serving the tea. I mean, we see these tea parties, and I often wonder, who are these Tea Party protesters really serving? I mean, you talked about sycophants, and those are servile flatterers of something, you know, corporations, these very wealthy people who are benefiting from the idea that, you know, we should give companies the benefit of the doubt that the free market will fix itself, right?
You know what? They say that, but that's a cover. They manipulate our domestic laws. That's not a free market. And that's where the tea baggers, that's the role that they play to essentially get their friends and family to, quote-unquote, drink the Kool-Aid, to believe that this is what a free market is. But in fact, it's not free at all. It is manipulated by, again, this tiny minority of new breed CEOs. That's where Americans need to understand that we have the power. They rely on us to do every single thing in this society, and we do it proudly, but we've been hesitant to take our talent and ingenuity into the political arena. But I think now Americans are realizing that, in fact, they can move into the political arena and shape the circumstances of their life, as they have done that for corporations. What I mean is, particularly white-collar professionals, most of our jobs are about serving the corporation and serving their interests. We take our talent and advance corporate interests, and we never take that talent and ingenuity and advance our own interests outside the corporation.
I'm not sure a lot of people who are involved in this Tea Party movement, Donna, know that the big investors, the big money responsible for laying down all this astroturf and use of the media to do so, the big money's coming from these corporations that are not hiring them, right?
Exactly. Now, one fascinating connection between, say, tea partiers, I guess, and these tea baggers and outsourcing is that these tea baggers will not support corporations in their outsourcing of American jobs. So this may actually be a wedge that prevents corporations from providing a complete package to the tea baggers. So what it means is that progressives and people who care, moderates who care about the America that we have built in the past, they'll be able to use the issue of the outsourcing of American jobs as a wedge inside the tea baggers.
What you're saying, too, is that the people who have been dividing us and counting on the idea that we'll never arrive at common ground, progressives and, let's say, those who are more to the right or more conservatives, can never find common ground with one another. And that's simply false. We find common ground with one another all the time. Maybe not on the specifics of an abortion law, maybe not on the specifics of school prayer, but very likely on the specifics of jobs.
Exactly. There is tremendous agreement that America should not outsource top-dollar white-collar jobs. No matter what your political viewpoint, everybody agrees with that. And what's fascinating is, despite this tremendous high level of agreement, we haven't sprung up organizations that directly take this issue on. That's one of the reasons we created Bright Future Jobs, to explicitly organize this tremendous power against the outsourcing of white-collar jobs.
you know, it really matters to everyone who lives here in America, I think, on some level, that if we're concerned about freedom and rights, we be concerned about who's controlling the markets that influence the strength of our dollar and that provide, you know, stability to the economy. We've just seen a major banking industry collapse, Wall Street collapse. We all suffered the consequences. And so we can see the sort of intricacy of how we're all, you know, interdependent in that very important economic way. But I think we need to know that we can trust corporations. How can we do that when they're based in China and responsive to Chinese leaders and Indian leaders if they're there? You know, Istanbul may not care anything about the American worker and, you know, his or her freedoms, right? So we take a big risk if we base our entire support system on corporations that are leaving us behind for other countries and other governments.
I agree. And you know what? You don't trust. You participate. When you participate, you don't need to trust. That's the key, is particularly the white-collar professionals have always trusted the political process to the corporations. They may grumble, but they've never stepped forward and said, I've got the talent, I've got the ingenuity, I can shape the circumstances of my existence when I participate in the political process, furthering my goals. So, yeah, the object of the game is not to trust. It's to participate, and then you know what's on the table because you've written it, and you know what your goals are, and you know the system. You know the rules, and you can write those rules.
Donna Conroy, what do you suggest listeners do after listening to this broadcast?
Well, the first thing they should do is go to brightfuturejobs.com and sign up to be on our mailing list and click on the link that says H-1B Only Want Ads. There's a slideshow. You're going to be shocked at these blatantly discriminatory ads, but you're going to know exactly what's at stake, and you're going to see how this whole process works. And then the third thing is call your senator. Make sure that they support Senator Durbin's 887 and that they are aware of these provisions in the Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill. And then the fourth thing they should do, I've got a lot of things that they should do, don't I?
That's all right.
The fourth thing they should do is let their senators know that there is a tremendous oversupply of technical talent and that the U.S. needs to start coming up with policies that address this oversupply.
We can convert the economy to green and non-defense industry as well. I just thought I'd throw that in there. Donna Conroy, thank you so much for joining us to explain this complicated program that you're now doing, a former IT worker turned IT worker advocate, Donna Conroy.
Thank you so much for having me on, Dory.
Donna Conroy is executive director for the group BrightFutureJobs.com. They're working to advance a bill that would set limits on the outsourcing of U.S. jobs. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dory Smith. This program is produced in Storrs, Connecticut, and syndicated with Pacifica Network. TalkNationRadio@gmail.com to write to us, and you can listen to this broadcast again or download for air at your local radio station at TalkNationRadio.org and at our blog.